This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. There have been several significant rulings recently in the continued fight over partisan gerrymandering in states around the country. The U.S. Supreme Court this week said it won't interfere with a ruling ordering Pennsylvania lawmakers to redraw congressional district maps, which state courts had found in violation of the law. But the court also stayed a North Carolina ruling, which will likely leave existing maps in place for the next elections. Meanwhile, the court is still considering a Wisconsin redistricting case, Gill v. Whitford.
Dave Daly has written extensively about the issue for the website Salon and in his most recent book, Rat Effed. His recent reporting shows the history of a coordinated gerrymandering effort may go back farther than previously believed. Daly spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers and talked about players in gerrymandering's modern history, starting with a man named Thomas Hoefler.
If you want to understand why in this 50-50 country that's so closely and deeply divided, Republicans have all the power in Washington and in more than two-thirds of all the state legislative chambers around the country, it's people like Tom Hoefler who were part of a plan called Red Map leading up to 2010 census and then the years after the 2010 census, and they were responsible for focusing the attention of the Republican Party on redistricting in 2010, and in a really focused and concerted state-by-state effort to make sure that when the maps were redrawn in every state, including Wisconsin, after that census, that it was Republicans who had every single seat at the table, and that they had the best electoral strategy leading up to that election to make sure that they controlled all of these state chambers, and then that they had the best mapping and computer technology afterwards to draw lines on which Republicans have not lost yet this entire decade.
So, David, you wrote an entire book on this topic. But you recently realized that the timeline went a little further back than even you realized.
It's amazing. There has been so much litigation about these maps, not only in Wisconsin, of course, but in state after state, judges have taken a look at these maps and they've been outraged. And as a result, there has been all kinds of new evidence that's been subpoenaed and evidence that's come in through the discovery process. And what it shows is that the Republicans were working on this redistricting campaign before even the 2008 election. So early in 2008, they are already fundraising and asking their donors to contribute to an effort to win state legislative chambers so that the party can have an outsized influence over redistricting when the new lines are drawn after 2010. This is before the election of Barack Obama. This is going back very far. And it's really an unheard of concerted effort to be able to understand how important local elections can be. At this point in time, Democrats were really just focused on the presidency. They were thinking about winning and taking back the White House after two terms of George Bush. Republicans were already playing a longer game. They were looking ahead to the next decade and what that would look like and how they could create conservative governance in all of these states, and how they could take expensive swing seats at the congressional level completely off the table, just wipe them off the map altogether. And they pulled it all off.
What kind of insight does this give us into the thinking of GOP leaders, both at that time and now, you know, a decade later?
Yeah, I think it's a really brilliant strategy. And what you saw even just last week was an Ohio congressman by the name of Steve Stivers, who is the head of the National Republican Campaign Committee, the organization responsible for keeping the House in Republican hands. And they asked him about 2018 and the prospects of a blue wave. And he kind of said, well, Democrats are looking good this year, but redistricting gave us a huge advantage. So here we are heading into the fourth election on these maps. And the Republican advantage that they achieved because of these victories back in 2010 and the lines that they drew in 2011 still endures. In 2012, which was the first election held on these maps Democratic candidates nationwide get 1.4 million more votes than Republicans, and yet Republicans hold on to a 234-201 advantage in the U.S. House. If you take a look at five key swing states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Ohio, and North Carolina, they send collectively 49 Republicans and 20 Democrats to Washington. And not one of those seats has changed hands all decade. Democrats have not managed to flip a single seat blue in any of those swing states. So as we head towards 2018, there are lots of data journalists who are projecting a big Democratic wave. There are lots of generic congressional ballot polls showing that Democrats have an advantage. But if you look at the actual elections in every state so far on these maps, Democrats have had no luck at all. And that continues even in 2017 in Virginia. I mean, Democrats gained a key 15 states in the House of Delegates in Virginia, but they won a quarter of a million more votes than Republicans and still could not take back the chamber. Republicans are still in charge. So Democrats have a steep wall to climb.
David, you know, this is kind of an aside. The Senate GOP recently tweeted a tribute video to Ronald Reagan where he says, "We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us." And as I watched it, I wondered to myself, does the practice of partisan gerrymandering really stand in opposition to that ideal and that concept?
No, I think you're exactly right. And the extra irony there is that in one of his farewell speeches, one of his final speeches, Ronald Reagan came out aggressively against the idea of partisan gerrymandering. He said, "We've got to do something to fix this," way back in the fall of 1988. So I think if Ronald Reagan was taking a look at what was happening right now, even he would be a little bit horrified about how the Republicans have managed to keep all of this control.
How are they able to maintain this populist narrative? That's part of what confuses me, because they have been very open about what they were trying to do with partisan gerrymandering, what they hoped to do and were able to do, and yet they maintain this populist narrative.
Yeah, it's a great question. And there have been, you know, lots of books, whether it's, you know, Tom Frank on What's the Matter with Kansas, or, you know, lots of folks who have, you know, tried to address this gap between sort of the populist face of the party and sort of the very different manner in which they govern. I would say that it becomes possible to do that when you feel like you are insulated from the voters. What you have seen in the last year is the U.S. House passed not only the Obamacare repeal, but also a tax bill, both of which in public opinion polling ranked among the least popular pieces of legislation in decades that had been considered by the U.S. House. And yet they passed them anyway, which makes you think that perhaps the donors are in charge and not the people. And it makes you think that perhaps the folks who are voting on these bills simply don't fear being voted out of office.
Have you heard an explanation from GOP leaders that explains why partisan gerrymandering might be good for democracy? Have there been arguments to that effect?
That's a great question. I mean, famously, there is a political scientist in Texas who has argued that, you know, partisan gerrymandering is good for democracy because it creates these polarized districts and you end up with a real debate of ideas in Washington because everybody feels as if they are represented. He's written a book about this, and I'm trying to encapsulate his ideas as best I can here. I think essentially what he is saying is that when districts represent overwhelmingly the will of one group of people, more people get their will represented than they would if they were scattered. And I'm not sure that line of thinking makes an awful lot of sense, but it does to the Trump administration, which has decided to make this man the deputy director of the U.S. Census in 2020. And the census, of course, is crucial to the next set of maps that will be drawn in 2021. So we may well have in charge of the census, somebody who thinks partisan gerrymandering is terrific for America, I would say look around at what it has given us over the course of this last decade, the extreme polarization, the gridlock, and the dysfunction, and all of these states in which you have veto-proof supermajorities, even though the party gets a minority of votes. And I would say that the partisan gerrymandering has been a disaster for this country.
It seems like courts have largely agreed with you on that matter in states like North Carolina, Texas, and of course, Wisconsin. But the federal Supreme Court has allowed these maps to stay in place for the time being. What has their rationale been?
It's been an amazing decade. These maps have taken a beating pretty much every single time they've come before judges. And you're right, in all of those states, there have been big wins for the forces against partisan gerrymandering. The U.S. Supreme Court, however, has never in our history articulated a standard that defines when a partisan gerrymandering is unconstitutional and when it has gone too far. It now has two new chances. One of them, of course, is Gill versus Whitford from Wisconsin. The other case is Benisek versus Lamone, which is a partisan gerrymandering case out of Maryland, in which the Democrats squeezed an extra congressional district for themselves, turning a 6-2 Democratic map in Maryland into a 7-1 Democratic map. And those two cases are before the Supreme Court right now. We already know that there are four liberal justices who are interested in trying to solve this problem, and we know that there are four conservative justices who are pretty skeptical and not particularly interested in involving the court in what they've called the, quote, political thicket of redistricting. So the swing vote is Justice Kennedy, who has indicated that if he can see a clear and reasonable standard, if that can be articulated for him, that he would be interested in finding a remedy. So all indications are that if you look at the tea leaves out of the court, that the five of them are going to come up with some kind of remedy. Nobody quite knows exactly what it is or how far it will go. But it seems as if some of these most extreme toxic partisan gerrymanderings could be reined in by the next time this comes around. The North Carolina case, this is the first time ever that a lower federal court threw out an entire state congressional map on the grounds of it being an unconstitutional partisan gerrymander. The court has stayed that ruling until it considers the Wisconsin and Maryland cases. We ought to have word on that probably in the spring after there's a ruling in Whitford and in Benisek. The Pennsylvania case is pretty interesting because it also involves the striking down of an entire congressional map four elections into this decade. But it's a state constitutional violation there. It was the state Supreme Court that threw those maps out. So the U.S. Supreme Court has declined to get involved. You may very well see new maps in Pennsylvania in 2018. And that means an awful lot because Pennsylvania is one of the most gerrymandered states in the country. There are 18 congressional districts there in this essentially blue swing state. And Republicans hold 13 of the 18 seats. So that's 71% of the seats, even though they routinely win less than 50% of the votes. If you turn that around, the Democrats get more than 50% of the votes and hold fewer than 30% of the seats. So there's a good chance for a handful of Democratic seats to be picked up this fall in Pennsylvania.
So we're expecting a decision on Whitford and Benisek coming out in spring. Does it seem plausible that the federal Supreme Court would require the redrawing of these maps before the 2018 election?
That feels pretty doubtful to me. The Supreme Court tends to hate forcing states to redraw maps in the middle of an election year, let alone 4 or 5 months outside of an election year. I would be very surprised if at a point in time when, you know, parties have nominated candidates have been raising money and campaigning in specific districts, if they then went ahead and tore it all up and mandated new maps. The danger of all of this is, though, is that it encourages politicians to simply try to run out the process. So it could well be that these maps in Maryland and also in Wisconsin, as well as North Carolina, are proven unconstitutional, but they've survived for 8 out of 10 years of a decade. Once again, I would say that that's pretty dangerous for the idea of democracy.
regardless of what happens in the courts, what are we seeing at the state level? I know in Wisconsin, we've had this fair maps resolution. More than two-thirds of voters feel we should have legislation creating a nonpartisan agency. Have we seen that in other states?
It's amazing. There has been an outpouring of citizen activism in state after state across the country. I mean, my publisher made me give this book a vulgar title because they did not think that people knew what gerrymandering was, or if they did, they thought it bored them and it would make their eyes glaze over. What we have actually seen, though, now are hundreds of thousands of people signing petitions in Ohio, in Michigan, in Virginia, in North Carolina to end partisan gerrymandering, to force truly democratic solutions, to bring independent commissions into play, to be thinking about new ways of drawing these districts that actually enhance, you know, fair representation. It has been wonderful to see. I mean, in Michigan, 400,000 people have signed a petition that started with a frustrated young person's post on Facebook the day after the 2016 election. This has turned into a real movement there called Voters Not Politicians. In Ohio, where these lines were drawn in what the politicians themselves called the bunker, a secret suite at the DoubleTree Hotel in Columbus, Ohio, where they hid out and drew these lines in private. What you have seen is 250,000 people signing petitions. And just this week, politicians in Ohio essentially threw up a white flag and they said, okay, we will fix redistricting here. They were so afraid of the idea of a constitutional amendment that they work together with reformers to fix this system. So when people get involved, they can do amazing things, even with an issue that seems as esoteric and technical as gerrymandering. Really, it is at the root of our democracy. These lines are the building blocks of our democracy. And when they get corrupted and twisted, it twists the essence of fairness.
David Daly, thank you so much for speaking with me today once again. I look forward to hearing more from you.
A pleasure. Absolutely anytime. Thank you so much.
Dave Daly is a senior fellow for Fair Vote and the author of Rat Effed, the true story behind the secret plan to steal America's democracy. He spoke with Joy Powers, and you can find coverage of Wisconsin's gerrymandering case before the U.S. Supreme Court at WUWM.com.